Quality sleep is essential, and that's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. So you can choose what's right for you whenever you like. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature. Quiets their snores. Sleep Number does that. Sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on Sleep Number limited edition smart beds for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
That boy would still be alive and the victims thereafter if they had been handled differently. That's the thing that bothers me the most.
This is CNN's The Rewind, a podcast showing how CNN covered events of the past. I'm your host, Michaela Pereira. In this episode, we are going to look at the life and crimes of Jeffrey Dahmer. Look, I'm going to say it up front, that while we're not going to go into too much detail of the Dahmer murders, this episode is really, truly best suited for mature audiences. So if you have young children with you, you might want to wait until they're out of hearing distance. Jeffrey Dahmer became one of the most notorious names of the 1990s. Even now, his name gives me the chills, and I know I'm not alone. Back in the 90s, the public interest in Dahmer was massive. Details of his shocking crimes unfolded following his 1991 arrest. See, Dahmer confessed to killing and dismembering 17 boys and men between 1978 and 1991. Police also found evidence of cannibalism. I mean, this was gruesome. He met and killed his first victim in 1978 at Dahmer's childhood home in Ohio. Stephen Hicks was a 19-year-old hitchhiker lured to Dahmer's home with a promise of beer. But when Stephen tried to leave, Dahmer killed him with a barbell. He then dismembered Stephen's body and scattered his bones in the woods behind the house. His remains would not be found until Dahmer's arrest and confession some 13 years later. In 2004, Lionel Dahmer and his second wife, Sherry, told CNN's Larry King that Jeffrey Dahmer had a pretty typical Midwestern childhood. Lionel says that while Dahmer was a very shy child, he did not see any red flags about his personality.
He was very shy, as you say, in elementary school. Awkward?
Yes. His elementary school teacher tried desperately to get him to interact with the other children, but it just didn't work. It was right after the move from Iowa State University after I got my PhD.
To Milwaukee?
From Iowa State University in Iowa.
Well, now, when you saw it this shy, didn't you have some wonderment that something's wrong here?
Yeah, we involved him in soccer and tennis and 4-H. We raised lambs and chickens and on our two-acre property. We involved him in all kinds of activities. We interacted at school. We tried to get him together with some kids. He did have a small circle of kids. It wasn't as if he was just totally off in a corner.
Did he watch cartoons? Did he like Batman?
Yes.
Did he like movies?
We watched Popeye together every morning, Saturday morning.
Did he laugh?
He laughed, yes. It wasn't as if he was totally morose, Larry, you know. But after we moved from Iowa to Ohio, it seemed like the inferiority and shyness just it was so exacerbated and increased to a great degree.
What was he like as a teenager?
He had a small circle of friends who liked to play gags and joke around a lot. And
practical jokes?
Yeah. Yes, Jeff played on the tennis team, and a friend of his played with him on the team. And instead of playing, you know, seriously, they would just joke around, and his opponents couldn't understand why they were laughing so much.
Did he date girls?
No, he did not.
Did he drink?
He did drink in his 11th and 12th grade. Which we found out, I didn't know anything about.
You didn't know it at all.
I didn't know that. He was going down to his friend's house and taking from the liquor cabinet.
Jeffrey Dahmer's drinking continued through his teenage years and into his 20s, but it would appear that some other concerning behavior had popped up before the drinking began. During the 1992 trial, it came out that as a 12-year-old, Dahmer had collected and dissected dead animals. Here's Larry King and the Dahmers again.
What did he do with the animals?
Well, he examined them and he cut into them. Cut them open to examine the insides of the animals. And by the way, a lot of people have been telling me that they've done the same thing, but they didn't turn out like Jeff. But there was one thing that was different with Jeff. He did what most all of us young males do when the hormones kick in tremendously, and he was doing something sexually with them. And I think the neuronal connections, you know, made contact and sort of hardwired Jeff, so to speak.
What did the doctors explain to you that was? I mean, what do psychiatrists say when they hear this, even after the fact? What is that illness?
I forgot the formal name of necrosis. Not necrosis. Necrophilia.
But do you know what causes it? Why people are necrophiliacs? There was anything said to you, Sherry?
Well, not in great detail. No. It was not something anyone really wanted to discuss because it was so abhorrent. No one said this is the hard definition of necrophilia. No. Other than he was sexually deviant and he obviously found satisfaction with something dead.
And do we know why someone who is sexually deviant is sexually deviant?
No, not really.
To be clear, necrophilia is defined by dictionary.com as an erotic attraction to corpses. Dahmer did admit to having sex, among other sexual acts, with his deceased victims. So soon after killing Stephen Hicks, Dahmer went to college. When he quit after a semester of heavy drinking, his father pushed him to join the military. So Dahmer enlisted in 1978 and reported for duty in 1979.
He came back home, and I then proceeded to take him to the Army.
He enlisted.
Sign up for the Army, right.
Because he went to the Army?
I told him there just doesn't seem to be any other way to go right now.
Did he serve?
He served. He came back from boot camp looking like just a wonderful physical specimen, smiling, helped me out cutting wood. We were encouraged.
What happened?
But don't forget, during all this time, when he was at Ohio State, he was drinking to cover up that first killing that occurred in...
That occurred when?
When he was 18.
And who did he kill?
Stephen Hicks.
This is all discovered later.
Yes.
When his mother left and he wanted to stay behind, he became very lonely. And that's when the first murder occurred.
He was about 18?
18.
He was 18 and I had moved out of the house.
17 going on 18.
I had moved out of the house and he was left alone by his mother who moved to northern Wisconsin.
After his parents separated, 18-year-old Dahmer was left alone in the childhood home for a time before his father moved back into the house with Sherry.
And, of course, Jeff was a closet homosexual.
And you knew none of that either?
None.
Nothing.
No indications.
So he's now committed a murder, but he's out of the Army. He seems fit to you, but nothing seems to work. What happens after the Army?
He kept getting together with another young man.
This is in Ohio or
yes,
Wisconsin?
In Ohio. And getting into trouble.
Police trouble?
Mm-hmm. Yes. I would give him my car to go look for a job, and he would end up drinking and leaving the car. He forgot where he left the car many times.
Lionel Dahmer says that things got so bad that they actually sent young Jeffrey away. Jeffrey Dahmer moved in with his paternal grandmother in suburban Milwaukee. Dahmer later confessed to 3 murders in her home.
For a while, it went very well. My mother cooked for him, and he finally found a job at a chocolate company. And it went quite well for a while, but then things started to occur. He got a note at the library one time where he was, and a note offering sex. And this was after 5 years that he was living with my mother. And suddenly that somehow...
A note from someone offering sex with him.
Yes.
From a male.
Yes. And that somehow set him off on a homosexual murder spree.
That eventually took how many lives?
17, I think.
All of them in what city? Were they all in one city?
Milwaukee.
He was
except
living,
for the first one.
And he was, so the first one was in Ohio.
Ohio. Mm-hmm.
And the other 16 were in Milwaukee.
Milwaukee.
And he was working in the chocolate factory at the
right.
time?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And he maintained that job?
Yes.
And in contact with you?
Had contact with us. We were in Ohio. We'd visit. We'd talk on the phone.
No sign of anything other than the drinking.
He was getting arrested once or twice a year.
Disorderly conduct.
He also pulled a gun out in a bar one time. So we thought we were going up there to get him out of trouble in regards to his drinking problem. Again, no hint that there was a darker side to his life.
But a darker side existed nonetheless. Coming up next, Dahmer's neighbors noticed something strange, strange sounds, smells coming from his apartment.
He would tell us that the freezer had went out and his meat had spoiled, you know, and I just went and bought $200 worth of meat and my meat spoiled. I'm sorry about the smell, you know. So we had even loaned him our fan, you know, to blow the air out of his apartment.
How Dahmer finally got caught right after the break.
I know the families of the victims will never be able to forgive me for what I have done. I promise I will pray each day to ask for their forgiveness when the hurt goes away, if ever. I have seen their tears, and if I could give my life right now to bring their loved ones back, I would do it. I am so very sorry.
Welcome back to CNN's The Rewind. I'm your host, Michaela Pereira. So as you know by now, Dahmer's first murder was in 1978. He did not kill again until nearly 10 years later. From 1987 until his capture in 1991, he killed 16 more people. He eventually moved out of his grandmother's house in 1988, eventually moving into the infamous North 25th Street apartment number 213 in Milwaukee, where he would eventually be caught. Looking back, in retrospect, there seems to have been a couple of red flags that something peculiar was going on in that apartment. Neighbors often complained about the smell coming out of his place. Dahmer told them his freezer had broken and $200 worth of meat had spoiled. But they also occasionally heard the sounds of a chainsaw. Super strange, super creepy. On one occasion in May 1991, a 14-year-old boy named Conorak Synthesymphome had escaped Dahmer's capture. Neighbors found him naked and bleeding on the road near Dahmer's apartment. Naturally, they called the police.
And this is a young man. He is butt naked. He has been beaten up. He is very bruised up. He can't stand. He's study fall out. He is butt naked. He has no clothes on. He was really hurt. And I ain't got no corner on him. I just seen him, and he needs some help.
Where is he at?
On 25th Estate, the corner of 25th Estate.
He's just on the corner of the street?
Yeah, he in the middle of the street. He fell out. We trying to help him. Some people trying to help him.
Okay, and he's unconscious right now?
Yeah, he getting him up. He is bruised up. Somebody must have jumped on him and stripped him or whatever.
Okay, let me put the fire department on the line. They'll send an ambulance, okay?
Okay.
Just stay on the phone, okay?
Okay.
Fire department.
Yes, because you send the ambulance on the corner of 25th Estate.
What's the problem?
Okay, is this butt naked young boy or man or whatever? He is butt naked. He's been beaten up real bad, and he fell out, and people are trying to help him stand. He can't stand. He's butt naked. He has no clothes on. He is very hurt.
Is he awake?
Yeah, he ain't awake. They trying to get him to walk, but he can't walk straight. He can't even see straight.
Well, Dahmer told the cops that he and Conorak were quarreling lovers, and that Conorak was 19 years old, even showed them naked Polaroids that Dahmer had taken the night before. The officers went inside the apartment, but didn't look around. It turns out, Dahmer admitted later, there was a dead body in the next room over. In the end, the officers left the boy with Dahmer and called back into the station. When the audio was finally released, the lightness of the officer's tone caused quite a stir in the community.
The intoxicated Asian naked male was returned to his sober boyfriend.
One of the neighbors, Glenda Cleveland, had even followed up with police.
What was Milwaukee police?
Yes, there was a squad car, number 68, that was flagged down earlier this evening, about 15 minutes ago.
That was me.
Yeah, what happened? I mean, my daughter and my niece witnessed what was going on. Was anything done about the situation? Do you need their names or information or anything from them?
No, not at all.
You don't?
Nope. It's an intoxicated boyfriend of another boyfriend.
Well, how old was this child?
It wasn't a child, it was an adult.
Are you sure?
Yep.
Are you positive? Because this child doesn't even speak English. My daughter had, dealt with him before, seen him on the street, catching earthworms.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, he's it's all taken care of, ma'am.
Are you sure?
Ma'am, I can't make it any more clear. It's all taken care of. That's, he's with his boyfriend and his boyfriend's apartment where he's got his belongings also.
But
that's where it's released.
Isn't this, what if he's a child and not an adult? I mean, are you positive this is an adult?
Ma'am.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I explained to you. It's all taken care of. It's as positive as I can be.
Oh, I see.
Okay, I can't do anything about somebody's sexual preferences in life.
Well, I'm not saying anything about that, but it appeared to have been a child. This is my concern.
He's not.
He's not a child.
No, he's not. Okay?
Oh.
And it's a boyfriend-boyfriend thing, and he's got belongings at the house where he came from.
Mm-hmm.
He's got pictures of himself and his boyfriend and so forth, so.
Oh, I see.
Okay?
Okay, well, appeared to have been a child. That was my concern.
I understand. No, he's not. No.
Oh, okay, thank you.
Okay.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye.
Imagine, she made that 911 call only to learn that the boy she tried so hard to protect would be brutally killed by Jeffrey Dahmer. Less than 2 weeks after Dahmer's arrest, Larry King spoke to Glenda Cleveland.
You know, I'm almost speechless at this point, going back over the situation and whatnot. I was thoroughly convinced that this was a child.
And you witnessed the child. What happening to that child?
I didn't witness it. It was witnessed by my daughter and my niece.
Mm-hmm.
And they thoroughly convinced me beyond the shadow of a doubt that this was a child involved in this situation.
And what was happening to the child that they convinced you to call 911?
Well, he was bleeding and he was nude.
Was Dahmer beating the child?
No, he wasn't, but he was pulling on him, attempting to divert and take him to wherever, he was going.
This child turned out to be how old?
14.
And he was one of the boys killed, right?
Yes.
These officers were suspended for not following procedures.
The investigation further discloses that the police department individuals who responded failed to conduct a basic, proper police investigation into the matter. Basic law enforcement practices were not followed.
In February 1992, Larry King talked to Jeffrey Dahmer's lawyer, Gerald Boyd, about that whole incident with police.
Concerning the police officers who were fired because of this, because Mr. Dahmer somehow talked them out of going in back into the house and they let the little boy go back in, what do you think should happen to them?
Well, frankly, Larry, the officers did go back in with Mr. Dahmer, and he convinced them by showing them pictures, by showing them how the clothes had been folded up, that this was really a boyfriend situation and that there was nothing out of line other than the fact that the young man had been intoxicated. And I asked one of the officers if they could have dreamed up an arrest. What arrest could they have dreamed up? And they didn't have anything. And I think initially it looked like they were cavalier about it, and I think in the final analysis the evidence showed otherwise. And I knew that because Jeffrey Dahmer early on told me about what happened in that apartment, and I don't think they should have been fired. And I hope that when their case comes up that people take a very sensible and reasonable view of these officers. They didn't have any crystal balls. They only saw what they saw, and they couldn't do much about it. Their problem was, as policemen often do, sometimes they, when they talk over the wire, they sound like they don't care, and I don't think that's true. I think that's just the nature of their kind of business, right. And I think these are good officers, and they shouldn't lose their job.
And do you think also, based on Mr. Dahmer's personality, the way he looked today, the way he acted, he fooled them?
Well, he fooled a lot of people. He certainly fooled me for a long time. He's fooled judges and probation officers, and that's just part of his sickness as far as I'm concerned. His object in life was so clear that he wanted a certain type of physique that in the interest of getting that, he was able to fool a lot of people and especially the victims. So it was just, that was his sickness, and that's what my doctors testified to.
You think he was aware of it today or he was fooling himself today?
No, I think, you know, that was asked after a news conference. This is a man who gave the police, he talked to the police for 60 hours. He gave a 169-page confession. I'm confident it's the longest confession in the history of America. This is a man who wanted to rid himself of this after he was arrested. So I don't think there's any question but that, and he cooperated with the police. He solved unsolvable crimes. If he hadn't told about five of these crimes, they never would have been solved. So I think he's very sincere.
All right, and he also said he thinks the police officers should get their job back, right?
That's what I heard him saying.
Do you think that if they got their job back, there would be an uproar in certain segments of the community in Milwaukee?
Well, I guess there would be, and that's unfortunate because I think we all have to put ourselves in the shoes of the people who had to make the decisions when they made them, and I don't think their decisions were wrong. I mean, what could they have done? They certainly, the youngster, although
well,
he was younger
than they could have searched the whole apartment, though, couldn't they?
Oh, no. They could not have searched
the
whole apartment. No, sir. They couldn't leave the room other than the room that they were allowed into. That's what the Constitution says. They could have asked for consent to do it, but they had no reason to believe that there would be a dead body in the next room. How would they possibly have known that? What they saw in the room was a tidy apartment with this young man laying on a couch or sitting on a couch who appeared to have too much to drink. So they couldn't say, well, I want to look through the apartment. And if they did that without permission, there might not have been any conviction of Mr. Dahmer at all, because then his constitutional rights would have been violated and somebody could have kept out all evidence.
But if the officers had investigated further, they would have found that Dahmer had sexually molested Conorak's older brother some 3 years earlier in 1988. Dahmer was convicted of the crime, but the 8-year sentence was shortened to just 1 year with probation. He was released in 1990. During his confessions, Dahmer admitted to killing Conorak later that very same day after the officers had left. Over the next 2 months, he would kill his last 4 victims. We'll be back after a short break. Welcome back to CNN's The Rewind. I'm your host, Michaela Pereira. Jeffrey Dahmer was finally arrested in July 1991. He had lured Tracy Edwards back to his apartment with promises of beer and, if he would pose nude, money. Tracy escaped and flagged down police. Here's News Channel 4's Owen May talking to Tracy just weeks after the incident.
And I'm not the one usually scared by anything but this, you know.
But this was about the scariest experience Tracy Edwards could imagine, especially since he knows now how close he came to being a victim. Edwards says he went to Dahmer's apartment in the belief that mutual friends of his and Dahmer's would be there. Dahmer, he said, seemed an okay guy.
He said he'd buy the beer and all this stuff, you know, and stuff like that. And said we could even bring our girls by. We were going to meet up at the lakefront and all this stuff, you know.
As for the talk of sexual activity in the apartment, there was none that night, he says.
He didn't ask for any sex or anything like this, you know.
Dahmer offered him a beer, but Edwards wanted to know about the smell. Dahmer said it was a sewer, a problem in the building.
Yeah, I said, well, we're going to have that beer and get out of here. He said, yeah, we'll grab one and get out of here right quick, you know, because he said he couldn't stand the smell itself, right?
Edwards was reluctant to detail what he saw in the apartment, but he knew Dahmer had plans for him.
Only the parts of telling me he's going to eat my heart and stuff like this, you know.
Edwards ran from the apartment and flagged down the police officers who later arrested Jeffrey Dahmer.
I'm surprised he was sitting there and waiting for him to get back. Really, can you figure that one out? I guess it was just his time, you know.
Tracy Edwards, the man who got away, says his feelings about Milwaukee these past 10 days have gone from good to bad, and back to good again.
Everybody's been great to me, you know. I've met good friends. At first, I was ready to leave Milwaukee, but now everybody's not bad. You know, there's certain things going on in the city that's not right, really. And I don't want to be seen as some type of hero. Only God is a hero, really. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I don't know.
As you heard earlier, Dahmer confessed during 60 hours of interviews. It came to light that many of Dahmer's 17 victims were people of color, leading some of the public to believe that Dahmer was racially motivated. Here's Larry King again with Dahmer's father and stepmother in 2004.
There were accusations that there were racial things involved, right? Because many of the victims were Asian or black.
Or black.
Is that correct?
In all my conversation with Jeff, that was not a factor at all.
Were any of the killings Caucasian?
There was, yes.
At least three victims.
Yes.
The trial began on January 30th, 1992, and lasted 2 weeks. Dahmer pled guilty, but insane. But the Wisconsin jury found that he was sane when he murdered the 15 men and sentenced him to serve 15 life terms. He stood trial in Ohio for the first murder and was also found guilty and ordered to a 16th life term. He was never convicted for his second murder of victim Stephen Tuomi because authorities never found his body. Dahmer went to prison in 1992. He remained in solitary confinement for about a year. He was bludgeoned to death in 1994 by a fellow inmate in a Wisconsin prison. Here are the Dahmers again with Larry King.
How were you told about Jeff's death?
The warden called me at home and said...
Before the news media had it?
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. Oh, yes. And then, of course, I sent a friend at work up to be with Lionel when I had to tell Lionel that his son had been killed.
How old was he?
He was 33. And for the second time, I sat at my desk, totally numb, paralyzed, to get the news.
Did you have a burial? Did they give you the body? Did you?
It wasn't released for over a year.
He wanted to be cremated.
Yes.
And his mother, his natural mother, wanted the brain, the dead brain, to be studied. I was all in favor before of having him studied by tomography mm-hmm. while he was alive. We can really find something, perhaps, but not a dead brain. There were some scientists at Case Western Reserve that claimed they could tell why he acted like he did. And it's not possible with a dead person.
What eventually happened to the body?
Well, I played attorney, filed briefs, and appeared in Wisconsin court and won. The judge ruled in my favor not to turn us into a circus anymore.
You cremated him?
Yes. Cremated him.
We had half the ashes and his mother the other half.
You have the ashes now?
We took care of them.
You took care of them?
We put him to peace.
Why did they hold it for a year?
Because he was legal evidence.
Oh, in the trial of the person who killed him?
Oh, yes.
Yes.
He was legal evidence, so he was held.
How was he handling prison?
How was who?
How was he dealing with prison, Jeff?
Jeff was... At first, it was extremely hard, but then he sent away for 13 books. It's down in El Cajon, California, Institute for Creation Research. I told him about the place, and he bought 13 books that turned him from an evolutionist into a creationist and from there into a Christian. And he started handing out pamphlets and so forth and talking with other prisoners, trying to...
So he was a born-again?
I'm sure, in talking with him, that it wasn't just a jailhouse conversion. I really believe that.
Because he wasn't going to get out.
No.
But here's the $100 question. Why? Why did he do it? Larry King asks the Dahmers.
Do we know why he killed?
Well, we don't know why he killed. I really believe there was a chance of finding that out had he not been murdered and he had been studied extensively.
Could have been inability to interact with people.
That's definitely part of it.
It's an overwhelming desire.
Yes.
He admitted that. He had an overwhelming desire to have passive mates.
Even the psychiatrists that examined him for the purpose of the trial didn't really know why he did it. But he did tell me why he felt that he could do what he did, why he felt free to do what he did. He told me that, and this was after reading the books on by these scientists mm-hmm. on creation science, he felt that he was up from the slime, as he put it. You know, molecules to amoebas to Larry, type of a thing, evolution. That there was nothing, no direction by a God, no one to be accountable to, no one to answer to at all.
That's what he believed.
That's what he felt. That's why he felt he could just do whatever he wanted to. That's quite different from knowing the cause of.
Did he ever explain to you why he ate even small parts of the body?
No. That goes back to, he did tell me that he felt that he just wanted to examine everything, as every possibility as far as control, having control.
Just as with the murder trial of O.J. Simpson, the crimes of Jeffrey Dahmer forever left a mark on our memories of the 1990s. Thank you so much for joining me on CNN's The Rewind 90s Edition. For more on this decade, head to cnn.com/the 90s for even more stories.
When you work next level. When you play next level. And when it's time to sleep, Sleep Number smart beds are designed to embrace your uniqueness, providing you with high-quality sleep every night. Sleep next level. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, the Queen Sleep Number C4 smart bed is only $1,599. Save $300 for a limited time, only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com. Prices higher in Alaska and Hawaii. Quality sleep is essential, and that's why the Sleep Number smart bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. So you can choose what's right for you whenever you like. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature. Quiets their snores. Sleep Number does that. Sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on Sleep Number limited edition smart beds for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.